Today's on .NET Show, we're going to be talking with Jared Parsons about C# 9. We're going to be talking about records. They let you write so much less code. If that's interesting to you, stick around. Welcome to another episode of the On.NET Show. Today, we're going to be talking with Jared Parsons about C# 9. Welcome, Jared.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rich.
Yeah, so C#, that's kind of what you do, right?
Yep, I'm the dev lead on the C# compiler team. I've been doing that. I've been working in languages at Microsoft for a little over 15 years now and on the C# primary team for about last 6 or 7 years.
Nice. So C# 9, that's the thing, like it's going to ship with .NET 5.0 later this year.
Yep. It's going to ship a part of .NET 5 and 16.8 of Visual Studio.
Yes. Cool. So we're going to kind of go through the entire language or just like some specific features?
Today we're going to focus on a little bit of a subset of features, mostly records, init properties, and top level statements is kind of what we're going to be going through today.
Right. So would you say, how would you characterize C# 9 from like a, you know, super small release, like massively game changing?
I would say it's kind of a medium style release, which makes a bit of sense given that when we released C# 8, that included nullability, which was on the massive end of feature scale. And so part of C# 9 is both doing some more work on nullability, but also catching up on a lot of stuff that didn't quite make it into C# 8.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay, how about we get started?
All right. So as I said today, I really want to kind of talk a bit about records. And so records are a new way in C# of letting you define class types. And particularly, these are meant for types which really act as values instead of traditional objects. And by that, by traditional objects, I mean in university, you're kind of taught that the job of types is to encapsulate state. Essentially hide it from your consumers. They should really only indirectly access it via methods and properties. In theory, you should be able to swap out all your state and the consumer should be kind of none the wiser. Value style objects are kind of the opposite of this. Their behavior is really defined by their state. For instance, like if you think about like a point, like int x, int y, the entire object is defined by that state. And those type of objects generally kind of eschew encapsulation. Instead, they just say like, hey, here's my X and here's my Y, like access it all you want. And these are fairly common types in programming in general in .NET as well. I mean, if you think about any kind of JSON programming you've done in C#, you've stubbed out a whole bunch of JSON values to go in and out of your serializer. And those are effectively all like value style objects. But in addition to kind of exposing their state, these objects tend to want kind of a fairly common set of behaviors. They want to have equality, so the ability to appoint two points with the same x and y, so like they should be equal. They want to have deconstruction. They want to work with C# pattern matching. And possibly they want to participate in immutability. And records come about because defining these types with these behaviors in C#, I mean, it's very doable. It's a small amount of code that code is quite boilerplate. And it's basically the exact same for every one of these objects. And while it's cheap on kind of an individual object, if you look at the totality of your program, it really starts to add up. Like if you think of an ASP.NET application, you're using a lot of these value style objects in all of your JSON definitions, your REST APIs, your EF models, a lot of the helper types you use for your Razor views. And this small amount of work on the individual scale just adds up a ton on the scale of a program. And I think kind of the best way to demonstrate like the power they provide is kind of start building up a sample from the point of view of a C# 8 developer and kind of getting a sense of the work involved to make this happen. So what we're going to do here is we're going to start. We're going to avoid watching Jared do a ton of typing. We're going to start with a very simple person type. And what we're going to do here is say that, hey, I have a class person. And it has first name. and a last name. And this is essentially kind of your minimal definition of a person. And this is what people really want to express at their core about the object. It has a first name and it has a last name. But then if you kind of look at the typical use cases, people want to be able to construct a person. They want to say like, hey, I want to create a person, Jared Parsons, or I want to create a person, Rich Lander. They also want these types to work well in serialization. I want to be able to pass my object through the serializer, get the JSON out. Then I want to be able to pass that JSON back through the serializer and know that these two person objects, they're equal. They represent the same set of data, and this should remain true even through the act of serialization and deserialization. And a lot of times when you start getting the kind of newer C sharp and you start looking at like C sharp 7 where we added tuples, or C sharp 8 where we added pattern matching, you want to start to be able to decompose these objects and deconstruct them and essentially pull this first name and last name out of the object and just treat them as individual fields.
Are you seeing these squigglies, by the way?
Oh, it's because we haven't enabled this behavior yet. This is the work that we have to do in C sharp 8. We're starting here with, here is the values that, this is what I want to type. This is the this person object is the core of what I wanted to express. I just have a first name and a last name. And here are all the things I want to do with that object, but it all comes with a price. And so like, for instance, the first set of squigglies is we have to get the constructor working. And so in order to do that, we're going to have to.
Oh, I see now.
And we have to basically define a person object, string first name, string last name. This is all, we've all written this code I don't know how many times in our lives. And so now that takes care of kind of the first set of squiggles. And then the second set of squiggles we have kind of, we basically have to now tell our object, okay, we want to participate in deconstruction. We want to work in all these pattern matchings. And so we essentially have to define the opposite of a constructor, a deconstructor. And we get to watch Jared do a bunch of typos. And so now we see, like, with a little bit of work, we've essentially got the program compiling now, and we have all the behaviors. And if we F5 through the program, what we're going to see, once my super fast laptop starts up, is that it's printing out the JSON. We are getting the deconstruction here. We can see that it is pulling the names out, and it is working in our pattern matching to see if Rich is in the chat or not. However, you'll see up here that P1 and P2 equality is false. It means we are not getting the equality we wanted out of this example. And that's because we haven't even added equality to this system yet. And to spare everyone the tedium of watching me type equality, we're just going to paste that in here. And so that is adding the operator equals, the various equal methods, the hash codes, and then going and adding the iEquitable interface. And as you can see, like, so now if we run the sample again, what we're going to see is now equality is working, we're getting deconstruction, the pattern matching is working, and we essentially have this functional type now. But the cost of this type, if you look, it's about 35 lines of just basic boilerplate code that really only has one way to be written correctly. And it's kind of tedious code, and it's really kind of even error prone on a scale. For instance, if I come back later and add new fields to this type, I have to go and update every single one of these methods in order to keep this to be a consistent, correct definition. And this is where records really come in and start shining. They recognize that we define so many types like this in our program. And if we don't, the reason we often don't define these types is because we get lazy and we're like, well, I can skip equality because I'm not really using it today. Or maybe I'm going to skip deconstruction because I just don't want to code it out. But with records, I can basically take this entire like 40 line definition and I can replace it with record person. And now all the code I wrote before is still there. It all compiles. And if we execute this code, we will see that I get the exact same behavior as before. We still get the pretty JSON output. Our records are comparing equally, all the deconstruction, all the pattern matching is working. And I've done it with just this tiny little definition, this very concise thing. And this is the core of what I originally wanted to say. I just said, I want a person and I want to have a first name and a last name. C Sharp, can you give me all the rest of this behavior?
So that makes sense. I've played with records, so I was able to see through to the end. Can you talk a little bit more about the equality nature? Because most people in C Sharp use classes, and mm-hmm. as you just demonstrated, classes their equality semantic is based on object identity, not based on content. The content that they hold. And so can you give a sense of, when people move to this new equality scheme, I guess their programs are going to act differently. Talk to how people should target this new equality system.
So this equality system is really essentially embracing the idea that the types that we want to use as records really represent values. They represent essentially something closer to structs than classes in a lot of ways, because you're not saying that the identity of an object is not the instance. The identity of a record is really saying, are all the values in my record equal? And so that's very similar if you kind of want to take the mentality of structs, where by default, structs essentially do field by field comparisons. And this is what you get with records, is we're saying, hey, these are just a collection of values that we're attaching a very common set of behaviors to. And one of those is equality.
Right. So this records very much kind of blur the lines between classes and structs. Like when people think about classes and structs today, it's they either talk about passing by value as opposed to by reference, or they talk about stack allocation versus heap allocation. They actually mostly don't talk about this equality issue, probably because it's just taken for granted. I guess how do you see people talking about records within that continuum? I guess maybe just as you've just said.
Yes, it's just embracing that these, when you are right, that they do sometimes blur the line between, is this kind of more like a struct or is this more like a class? And equality is a place where it is much more like a struct. It's very much saying that the actual identity, the allocated object, like, doesn't really matter. The identity, what makes two records equal is basically, are their constituent parts equal? And that's why we prefer, that's why they default to the struct base equality mechanisms.
Okay. So I don't know what you were wanting to talk about next, but the thing that I was curious about was the immutability aspects of records.
Yes. So one of the beauty parts of this is generally immutability in C# is something that you kind of have to pay for. C# is largely a mutable by default language, where we have certain constructs where you can opt into immutability if you want. For instance, like read-only structs, read-only fields, and what have you. Records is one place, though, where immutability is the default, especially when you use positional style records as I've done here. So you'll notice that if I come up here and I attempt to basically change the last name to another one, you're going to see an error because this property does not have an accessible setter, and so I cannot set it. However, records also provide, like when you're dealing with immutable objects, you do want to change fields, you do want to change states. But the way this is done with immutable objects is you create copies of objects and essentially change the state that matters to you in that new copy. And in C#9, we allow you to do that with a thing. Records come with a thing called withers. And so I could essentially change the value of last name by saying, like, I want to have P1 with the last name be, oh, that's my wife's last name. And so I want to basically, and what this will do is it takes P1, it creates an entire copy of it, changes the last name, the bone, and returns the new object. And you'll see that this this construct here looks a lot like object initializers, which is very familiar with C# programmers. And that's because it's the exact same construct. Like anything you can do, the types of operations you can do in an object initializer, you can do here. You know, if I misspelled my name, as I want to do. But here's the thing, like you're not, and while immutability is the default in records, especially when you go with positional syntax, it is by no means required. If you were someone who was like, you know, I understand immutability has benefits, I've read a lot about it, but it's just not for me. I'm really much more comfortable with having my record types be mutable. That's completely fine. You can add that in very easily by just saying, just define the properties and have them be normal mutable properties. And as you can see up here, nothing has changed. I've gotten no new red squiggles. You can see that this with expression, where I create a copy of the object and change a field, it's still working and doing exactly what it did before. But if I didn't like that, if I said, no, I want in place, I can now just say last name equals Tom, and it works great.
So that all makes sense, and it's great that people are going to have choice on mutability versus immutability. You know, you've been able to do immutable style programming with C# for some time. It hasn't been as nice as this. Do you feel like that people are going to finally adopt immutability as a kind of commonplace pattern now that records are there and make it significantly more easy?
I think they, so we're seeing, like, especially when we look at customer code, I work on the C# compiler team. We interact with customers a lot. You know, when there are compiler bugs, there are no compiler bugs, but we interact with customers anyway. And we can see a lot of the code, and you can definitely see the transition that people are embracing immutability more and more. And I think records will help with that because they make it easy. But actually, that also kind of transitions to the next thing I want to talk about, which is init-only properties. So just like if you look back in the history of C#, when we do big features like records, it's usually composed of several other smaller features. Like if you go back to link was composed of anonymous types, lambda expressions, and extension methods. One of the features that makes records work is what we call init properties.
Yeah.
So init properties are this idea that up until now, if you wanted immutability, there was a price. So if you wanted to, for instance, like let's go back to kind of the typical, example. So if you wanted to define an immutable type in C# 8, you would define a point type like this, where you would say like, hey, I have a point, it has an int, an x, and a y, and I have a constructor. And the way I make it immutable is I basically have getters with no setters. And this works fine. This is just a completely acceptable way to find immutable types in C#. But it does have a limitation because it means now, if I want to use this point, like I'm actually now like limited in how I construct it. I, for instance, can't say new point x equals 42, y equals 13. And this is something that I could have on all of my mutable objects. But once I go to immutable code, I can no longer do that. And that means both that immutable code in C# had less fluid construction and a higher cost to the type authors because it required them to write constructors, even when they didn't need to. But starting in C# 9, we now have this thing called init properties. And what these are is inits are a lot like setters, except for one big difference. They can only be used during the construction phase of the object. And so what that means is I am now can define my point that just had a get and an init. I can remove the constructor and I can use object initializers just like I would be doing for a mutable object. And you can see here that it's completely acceptable to set x while I'm building up the object. But afterwards, if I try to change it down here, I'm going to get an error because the object's fully constructed at this point. Immutability has taken hold and I'm no longer allowed to change the value.
So have you found, you know, we've had several previews now of .NET 5, although I can't actually remember when some of these particular features came in. But have you found some cases where people have started to transition more kind of large style code bases over to these immutable features?
Yes, we have. One nice thing is because of the way we preview C Sharp now, where we actually check it into the main Visual Studio code base and allow customers to kind of flip a flag and start using these features before we're finished, it makes adoption of these like much simpler. And so we have gotten a lot of feedback from customers on this. Init properties, mostly massively positive feedback. People are very excited about them and they have started transitioning to them, as well as with records. We have a number of customers who are starting to use them, give us feedback, and they really helped us kind of like finalize the design with that feedback.
Nice. Okay, so we should probably transition to closing out this video. What would you like to leave people with?
So what I want to leave people with is basically that when they're looking at like they should, when looking at their code and looking at all the times they've had these kind of like these small value-based types, like particularly if you look at your JSON serialization, all these small little types you define just to pack a few values and kind of throw them around in your program, you should really start to look at that and kind of ask yourself, like, is this just a collection of values? And if so, should I start using records to express them better when I adopt C# 9? And also looking particularly with init properties, like, can I make some of my objects, some of the types I've made before where I had maybe started using immutability, can I make it a lot simpler and a lot more fluid for my customers to use by embracing init properties?
Makes sense. So age-old question, are we going to start seeing people defining multiple types in a single file because of records?
I really hope so. I mean, if people really want to have like 21 line files in their, you know, project, I mean, more power to you. I would highly encourage you though to consider having records as a way to change your mentality and maybe let yourself define a few types in the same file.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, Jared, thanks for being on the show. You know, I think people love C#, and I think they're going to love C# 9.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
Awesome.